Welcome back to Innovation. I'm Kara Hetland, and joining me is Dr. Ranjit Kudali. He's a USD chemistry professor. He joins us to discuss the latest in research around the country. Dr. K is also the public relations chair of the Sioux Valley section of the American Chemical Society, and he is with us once a month. Dr. K, thanks for being here.
Good afternoon, Kara.
So today we're discussing 3D printed all-in-one evaporator for high efficiency solar steam generation.
Yes. So this was a recent paper coming from the group at the University of Maryland in the Department of Material Science and Engineering and Mechanical Engineering. So essentially their goal was to develop a low-cost material that could potentially use solar energy and purify water. And so that was their objective. And towards this goal, they had shown or developed a prototype, fairly small in size, like 2 centimeters by 2 centimeters, about a few centimeters in height, just to show as a proof of concept that one could use common printers, like 3D printers, which are becoming quite ubiquitous these days, to be used for purifying water. For example, one could envisage these materials for sterilizing water or for desalination.
And that's, you just heat it up, basically, right?
Yes,
and
so
that's
essentially,
what...
yes. So it is like a solar evaporator. So this... some operations typically try to reduce their liquid waste by placing their waste in large containers and allowing for sunlight to evaporate the liquid, so it is easy to use the power of the sun, which is free, and reduce the volume of their waste, and this way they can transport concentrated waste for disposal. So the idea that this team had is to develop some robust materials that can absorb solar light, but it is, should also be capable of being thermally insulating. Many of the solar evaporators dissipate the heat, and so you really are not able to remove liquid water into steam. So their material printed using 3D printers had three components. One, a material to absorb solar light or solar radiation. And two, it had a thermally insulating layer, so you can avoid these thermal dissipation. And the purpose is to increase the efficiency of converting water into steam. And then they had another material to transport the water across this prototype material and convert it into steam.
And so this 3D printed device, this is just solid. It's one piece, and it's just some. But the makeup of I want to call it the plastic, right? That is layered on a 3D printer. That is made up of those three components, correct?
Absolutely. So this 3D printing technology is becoming more and more common, and we have it in public schools, universities, and so forth. And so this technology of 3D printing is also called as additive manufacturing, AM process, and that is a process where you create a three-dimensional object. So essentially what a 3D printer does, it actually creates a desired shape that can be modeled on a computer, but essentially what happens is you're creating layers of material that are controlled by a computer. So the material that could be 3D printed, you could have a metal that is viscous enough so it can flow through the 3D printer cartridge. It could be polymer beads, as you alluded to. So that is the most common because polymer materials are quite cheap. And so polymer powders are typically used, and then they are melted, and they flow through these printer cartridges and to the desired shape, and you're creating this object generating multiple layers. The other material you could use is ceramic materials, so clay-like materials that have a reasonable viscosity so that it can flow. What this team at the University of Maryland did was they wanted something that could be cost-effective, and so they used a material called carbon nanotubes. And so these materials are very light yet very structurally stable. And one of the challenges of 3D printing materials and when you're trying to look at low-cost materials is once they're extruded through the printer, they have to maintain their original shape and form. And so that is often a challenge with polymers. They retain their shape that is desired. And so these carbon nanotubes and these graphene oxide, which is essentially a layer of graphite, they have the special property that was tailored in this work, wherein after extruding through this 3D printer, this material kept the same shape, and it was stable even after printing. And so it was non-deformable, and it had a structural stability. That was the key. And one of the main aspects of this paper was in trying to optimize the conditions for getting these materials with the right kind of thickness, viscosity, so it could actually flow through a printing cartridge. So think of it as an ink printer where you need the ink to flow through these fine nozzles in the printer. But at the same time, you need, as you're making these multiple layers of the solar evaporator, you need these material to be stable, and they should not change its shape after they are printed on a substrate.
Now, the information that you sent me talks about having a high porosity and solar absorption, and what's the significance of that?
Oh, absolutely. So just imagine we have a big plastic tub of contaminated water that we set aside under the sun, and we want to evaporate the liquid as much as possible so we can minimize the water content. And so we can just let this liquid evaporate under the sun, but it would take days, if not weeks, to concentrate that solution. Now just imagine we make this material, this solar evaporator using this carbon nanotubes and so forth, and graphene oxide. So just imagine placing a small piece of black substance that can float on this water. So essentially this material had three components, like I said. It had these material wall that was made of basically cellulose. Cellulose is the building blocks of paper, fabric, and textiles. And so it had a composite material made of these, what they call the nanofibrous cellulose. And on top was, and so this wall had high porosity. So namely what would happen is it had small pores such that the water molecules can go through these pores. So we have this device floating on water. The water, through capillary action, is going through these pores of this material that this wall, and it's going to another layer that is also made of these nanofibrous cellulose. And this layer is an insulating layer. So essentially what it is doing is it is trying to trap the solar heat within this device. And we must also realize, since this wall is hollow, it also has air. So you have water at the bottom, you have a wall, and you have this water evaporating because it's getting heated by the sunlight, and then you have air in between, which is a very good thermal insulator. And this wall is highly porous, and so it is allowing these water molecules to rise through due to capillary action, and then it is going and meeting this layer, another layer of this nanofibrous cellulose, but that layer is actually thermally insulating. So it is not allowing the heat to escape from this material. And that is also a very key and critical element of this proto-device. And so once these molecules are getting heated and their temperature is rising, essentially you have air, you have hot water, you generate steam, but it's not escaping. It's only escaping through the surface. It's not escaping from the sides. And so you're increasing the conversion of solar energy into steam. And then on the top, there is a layer that is also critical because you need, that is how sunlight is penetrating into this material. And that top layer is based on carbon nanotubes, and it is has a property, something called a broad spectrum. Essentially, it is a material that can absorb the visible light of the solar spectrum. So through some very clever design of having a material that can absorb solar light effectively, that can prevent thermal insulation loss, so one can improve the efficiency of water to steam conversion, and having a highly porous material that can allow for liquid water to go through its pores, that facilitated this high conversion of water into steam. And what was important was it was done under one sun illumination. So one sun illumination means when we are at a sea level around noon, that is typical for a sunny day, not overcast, no clouds, at sea level around noontime.
Now then, can you capture that steam and can that be used as a drinking water?
Well, that should be the next, that would be the next stage, I believe, because now you're just demonstrating that you can concentrate water without using any concentrators. So solar evaporators with concentrators are available, but they're expensive. You require expensive devices, installation, etc. And so the next step would be to capture the steam that is escaping through some mechanism and then liquefying that steam to get pure water. So one could think when you have some contaminated water, you could put it in a big tub, then have these devices. Of course, we have to scale this material. It is just a small prototype, 2 centimeters by 2 centimeters and a few millimeters in height. So then the steam ones that is escaped should be pure water molecules in the gaseous form, and that needs to be collected in another vessel. So this way we have pure water. So I think probably that would be the next step, is to demonstrate how we can capture that steam, which is pure water.
All right. Dr. K, I want to thank you for taking time and coming on the program today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Kara. It's a pleasure always to be on SDPB.